My name is Toby Webb. I'm one of the founders, one of the many founders of the Sustainable Wine Roundtable. And this is the first of our 2023 conference series, free online and available afterwards in audio and maybe even in video so that you can refer back to it. And this first conference, we're here to talk about how we can turn climate mitigation and adaptation into a business opportunity. And we've got various questions we put down on the agenda for our esteemed panel to discuss. And we're going to talk about some examples in this first session of how climate innovation can really create business opportunity. I'm delighted for this first panel to be joined by the speakers you see on the screen. I'm going to ask them just to do a couple of lines of self-introduction, and then we'll get into the conversation, really trying to focus on practical examples of climate innovation. So, Sandrine, why don't we start with you? Just give us a couple of sentences on who you are, who you work for, and what you do.
Thank you, Tobias. Hello, everyone. I'm Sandrine Sommer. I'm Chief Sustainability Officer at Moët & Cie. Moët & Cie is a wine and spirit activity from LVMH. And my job is really to push and to structure the sustainability program. And we have a name for this program called Living Soils, Living Together. And I will come back later to give you some more details.
Thank you, Sandrine. Kim, why don't you go next?
Yes, thank you, Toby. My name is Kim, and I'm sustainability manager for Vingruppen in Norden. And we are the largest group of agency wine importers in Sweden. And we are very keen about developing the wine market together with our wine producers in areas such as sustainability.
Thank you. Marta.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here today. So I manage the Porto Protocol Foundation, a sharing knowledge wine community with members across the world in the value chain of every size. And what we do is we share knowledge, best practices in order to bring climate action to life. Thank you.
Thank you, Marta. Valentina.
I am Valentina Lira. I am the sustainability director of Viña Concha y Toro. I am in charge of the coordination between the different subsidiaries of the company and also the implementation of the sustainability strategy of the company that has been in place since 2012.
Thank you. James.
Thanks, Toby. I'm James Streeter. I'm chair of the leadership committee of the Sustainable Wine Roundtable, the SWR. Just to explain very briefly, the leadership committee is drawn from our members. We have 10 members in the committee, and the aim is that we've got members from all parts of the value chain, from growers, producers, from distributors, and from retailers, and across the different geographies that we operate as much as possible. We're trying to bring together a group that actually really fully reflects the SWR.
Thanks very much, James. Well, we've got some interesting questions we laid out as part of the preparation for this. And of course, we've asked our panel to come with some examples of climate innovation. But let's just start with this initial question that we set, which is there too much doom and gloom about climate change? You know, it's very easy to be very depressed about it. And we have good reason for that. You know, you look at the outcomes of the biodiversity COP, which was held recently. You look at the climate science. It looks pretty bad, but clearly we have to turn it around. And we have to use innovation to do that, and we have to take a positive mindset. So thinking about the wine sector specifically, Marta, let me come to you first, because you work with lots of actors in this space, as we do at SWR. Do you think there's too much doom and gloom? Do we need to try and change the climate narrative in some way? Marta?
Yes, this is not Santa Claus. So it's science that is telling us that we need to change. And indeed, the topic you chose for this particular panel is really important. Is making it a business opportunity. Otherwise, chances are thousands and thousands of wineries will not understand that this is not just doing it for the climate, it's doing it for us. As businesses, as people, it's not just about, even for the wine, of course. So there is no Santa Claus in what's being told. We need to change, and we need to change the as you said, the narrative. I think we are doing it, you are doing it, and we are doing it together as well, to make it about solutions and to make it about business opportunities and why this makes sense for the medium to long term and even short term survival of businesses and our species. And I think we are seeing that, still not at the scale we need, but yes, that is happening.
Okay, I'm not going to put the same question to every member of the panel because I think they'll all be in violent agreement with what Martin's just said. But Kim, let me just turn to you because you're in Sweden, kind of the original home of environmentalism. If you look back at the history of it, you know, in the 60s, Sweden's kind of credited with being a leading place where environmental concerns became prevalent. Do you get any sense that the narrative's shifting to a more positive outlook? I mean, obviously, Greta Thunberg gets an awful lot of coverage and she has her way of doing it. But you know, what other examples are you seeing of us shifting to a more positive mindset?
Yes, I think we're seeing a lot of innovation and confidence in the wine industry, not at least in the Swedish sector of wine retailers, such as the work that the monopolies are doing in Scandinavia and in Sweden. I mean, we're seeing the developments of new market segments, that Solo is for sustainable wines that can prove that they're doing something for the environment, etc. So I think we're definitely starting to see a shift on the Swedish market towards more opportunity-based approach. But still, I think that, you know, the risk narrative, it's definitely an unbalance, I would say, towards risk rather than opportunity. But, you know, risks and consequences are what drives us. And there is a lot of challenges for the wine industry to tackle. But, you know, like you started with saying, I think with a lot of doom, you know, there might be an unintended consequence that we kind of like distance ourselves, saying that we care superficially, but not practically. So I think it's really, really important to start to change the narrative or the mindset into more opportunity-based. Because it's like Marta is saying, you know, it's uncharted waters of opportunities for wine companies to really bring business opportunities to this.
Thank you. Yeah, you make me think of the example that's been cited to me of engaging, you know, younger consumers often perhaps feel a bit sort of paralyzed and depressed about climate change. Some do. You know, what are the opportunities for canned wine, which is perhaps more popular with that demographic, to then engage them in a more positive message? Here are things you can do. And that's been an example that's been cited to me. We'll talk about others in a minute. Thank you, Kim. Valentina and Sandrine, let me come to you on the strategy question. Your companies, I think, have some of the most coherent and comprehensive sustainability strategies in the sector, if not the two most prominent. Just wondering, what can you offer our audience here on how climate strategy fits with a sort of sustainability strategy view? Is it all the same thing? You know, what have you learned about making strategy into innovation in your businesses? Valentina, let me come to you first.
I think it's difficult to get confused. When you have a sustainability strategy, having a climate strategy is not the same. I mean, so when you work with, you know, as a comprehensive sustainability strategy, you have to consider some of the topics like social or like your community. Sometimes those are different topics and they are complementary. But in order to tackle climate change, you have to make a specific strategy for that. You have to, you know, you have to set all the different steps that you need in order to have a very comprehensive sustainability, I mean, climate strategy, in order to define the goals, to see what are the topic or the material topics that you are going to address using your strategy for that. What are the main stakeholders that you are going to involve in your climate strategy? Set clear goals. And the most important thing, measure. What are the key performance indicators that you are going to follow in order to see if you're actually having an effective climate strategy? And then you know, continuous improvement and continues to grow in your ambition and continue to grow in your in the different aspects that you are going to tackle. So when you do that, it's a complement for your the climate strategy is a complement to your sustainability strategy, but it's definitely something that you have to have a clear path in order for what is the main topics that you're going to address. And, you know, set the milestones in which you are going to, you know, to start this journey and to continue this journey, because this is something that you will have to that you will have to continuously doing over and over and involving more and more stakeholders through time.
Thank you. And I guess as a follow-up before I come to Sandrine, for you, Valentina, with it, I run another business in sustainability. I work with a lot of food companies and agriculture companies. And one of the things that a lot of them are talking about is this idea of the just transition, which is the idea that we don't forget the human side of climate change activity. And I sometimes worry that the wine industry kind of neglects that a bit, doesn't get as much focus. Do you agree with that? Do you see that changing?
Yes, absolutely. Because today, I mean, the social aspects of your climate strategy cannot be outside the planning process. Because climate change finally is affecting all of the different sector and the different activities and the different stakeholders related to the wine industry. I mean, suppliers are having pressure, which is different to the pressure that they are receiving with the grape producers, for instance. So the activities or the different actions that you will need to take are different with your suppliers and your wine and your the grape producers. So you need to have a very wide scope in order to have, you know, the clear vision of what is the main plan that I need to prepare in order to give the different steps over time. So it's a very comprehensive one. And the social aspects of that are getting more and more importance over time.
Thank you. Well, we'll come back to that, I'm sure, throughout today. If you have questions for our speakers and comments, please do use the chat function. We probably don't have time to bring in everybody on video. It takes a bit too long. We've got tight sessions, but use the chat function to post your comments or questions to the panel. I urge you to keep them fairly short because the chat box is not very big and we haven't got time to read an essay. Sandrine, turning to you, I imagine you would agree with everything Valentina has said. What I find interesting about Moët Hennessy, excuse me, is you've kind of grounded a lot of your work through this idea of soil, which is something I think is a very relatable subject because climate can sound a bit kind of scary and, well, what do we do first? So how's that worked for you? And then perhaps we can talk about some examples of innovation that you've seen as a result.
Yeah. First of all, fully agree with what Valentina said, of course. And it's very important to always think about the strategy, sustainability strategy as a holistic view. You know, you have really people and planet, and you can't divide these two subjects. So it's very important to include everything in your sustainability strategy. And inside your sustainability strategy, climate mitigation, of course, is one of the key pillars. And this is exactly the thing for Moët Hennessy and for Living Soil, Living Together program. And as you mentioned, you know, Toby, I think for Moët Hennessy, we have something around the soils regeneration. And for sure, it's very important when you are talking about climate change to consider soils, you know, and to consider the transition to the regenerative agriculture in order to improve the quality of the soil. Because if you improve the quality of the soil, we all know that we can capture some carbon emission, and it could be one of the solutions for sure for the mitigation, for the climate mitigation. So you're right, it's a very important point. And you know, we organized this World Living Soils Forum last year in order to share the best practices and to be sure we are collectively work on the same direction, because what is very important for sure is to measure. And the second thing, I think the very important thing is to work together. So the sense of community is very important in order to tackle this subject. And the third dimension would be, I think, what is very, very important is to train, you know, because when we are talking about climate mitigation, it's very important. And you mentioned the narrative, you know, change the narrative. I think to change the narrative, it's very important to train, to raise awareness about the carbon footprint, how does it work, and so on. And for example, for our people, you know, we push a lot of training program around the climate fresk. You know, this is a specific tool in order to be sure to explain to everybody the link between the consequences and how does it mean the climate change, the climate crisis, how everything is linked. Again, you know, and how is linked to the human aspect as well. So I think measure, act for sure, together, and the training subject are key.
Thank you. Well, I was at that conference, and it was one of the best I've been to. I must have been to hundreds of sustainability conferences in the last 25 years and organised a fair few of them. But what I really liked about that event was that real focus on tackling climate, on something we could all understand. And I remember at the conference, someone said to me, why do you think they're doing this? And we talked about, you know, you're doing it to raise awareness and it's a really important way of grounding climate change. And somebody said to me, well, maybe they're doing it in part for their own people, because there were lots of your people there, lots of your brands. Everybody was very excited. What changes have you seen internally since then? Has there been an impact of that within your companies, within the business, in terms of encouraging innovation? Do you have any examples?
Yes, for sure. You know, for example, just one thing, we talk a lot about the cover cropping, you know, how it's good for the soil's quality. But after this meeting, you know, and the sharing, the best practices, everybody agreed about the cover cropping, the benefits of the cover cropping on our vineyard, and it increased the number of hectares of the cover cropping in our maison. This is the first thing. And the second thing, you know, it was this event, because we were not only all together, but it was open for all our competitors. It was open for all stakeholders about soils regeneration. And we felt, you know, the community. And the community, and we create some link, very interesting link, between, for example, a scientist and one of our competitors. So that's fine, you know, and it was very important, and it was the main aim of this forum, to connect in order, again, to act. And as this is exactly the target of this forum, to act, to innovate, in the right way.
Thank you. Well, let's talk about some more practical examples. Kim, I'll come back to you. Being from Sweden, you're supposed to be the leading end of this, as I partly mentioned before, which must be a bit of a burden for people from Sweden, everyone looking up to you, feeling like you're leading the way. What examples have you seen of us turning this into, you know, this whole debate into sort of positive message of change? We talked about it a little bit earlier, but I did ask the panel to bring some practical examples with them that we could all relate to. So, Kim, what have you got for us?
What do I got for you? I'm going to talk. I'm thinking I take our sustainability fund Winfinity now. So Vingruppen has a sustainability fund that serves, in this case, as a climate innovation. And this fund is not only helping our wine partners to mitigate and adapt to climate change, but it's also a possibility, a business opportunity, to access new consumer markets and ultimately sell more wines. And as we've been talking about before here, climate change, we all know, big challenge, especially for the wine producers, that is very vulnerable. And at Vingruppen, we used to say, or we argue, that 8,000 years of winemaking should just be the beginning. And with that, we mean that we need to take responsibility for our wine partners. And we believe that partnership is the best leadership to solve our common challenges. And that's basically why we created Winfinity. So the fund was launched in 2021, and it exists to support our wine partners and clients in creating a more sustainable value chain for wine. And through this fund, Winfinity, we annually invest in several sustainability projects. The investment provides funding for climate smart technology, but it's also helping, well, such as, you know, soil management that Sandrine was mentioning, and it could be green walls to keep a cooling temperatures in the production areas, or new types of energy solution. But the funding also provides trainings and implementations for our wine partners to reach important sustainability and climate standards. So let me give you an example. The fund or Winfinity successfully was able to support one of our wine partners, wine producers, in reaching a high-level sustainability certification. And this certification allowed them to access a new market segment in Sweden. So the process, so that's a very clear example of a business opportunity. But the certification also demonstrated, you know, helped them demonstrate a stronger commitment to climate change. So to wrap up, I bet some of you are wondering where the money comes from that we're using to invest. And that's another side of this, why Winfinity is, in my sense, a great solution. So Vingruppen has put a price on our carbon emissions. And this internal fee is providing us with a clear view and a financial initiative to reduce our climate emissions. So this is basically how Winfinity is structured. So every year, money is set into the fund, allowing us to identify and fund new projects. And before handing over to you, Toby, I also would like to share the great news that Winfinity recently received a generous investment from American wine producer Schaefer Vineyards. Schaefer is a forerunner in sustainability. They got their climate strategy in order, so they didn't feel the need to apply. However, they wanted to help others, less maybe fortunate wine producers, with their donation. And this investment means a lot to us. And I think it's a testament that Winfinity and our commitment to create a better future for our wine producers is inspiring others. And we're very thankful, because this we think that this can make a real and direct difference. So to conclude, we believe Winfinity is a unique solution to support climate action on different levels, build stronger partnerships, and grow our common abilities to access new markets, stay competitive, and sell more wine.
Kim, thank you. Excellent insight and example. That's a really solid, innovative, practical area of discussion. Thank you so much. That's really helpful. And if you have any links to any of that you want to put in the chat for anybody to reference, please do. I'm sure other people want to read up on this. We've got a couple of questions in the chat, but not enough. So get going with your fingers, audience. Type some questions. I'm sure you want to ask something. Valentine, let me turn to you for examples. Now, I've read your sustainability report. You've got lots of interesting stuff going on. we were surprised when we set up the SWR of how much interest we had from wine businesses in Chile and Argentina. We've seen some really interesting stuff coming out of members in the last couple of years. What are some of the examples that you would cite of innovation?
Yes. Actually, it's very good what is happening right here in Chile and also in Argentina, because we are able to see there is a lot of interest from the different vineyards in order to participate, in order to create action around the climate change. So we think that something that Kim just said is very, very important if we want to tackle this problem, which is partnership. Okay, this is something we need to understand, that this is something that we cannot do alone. So we have, in that's why big companies like us, for instance, we feel the responsibility of, gather different companies and also different stakeholders around this global movement. So, for instance, in our case, we did the first exercise of being aligned with the Science Based Targets Initiative in 2018. So we were the first winery in the world to implement that methodology as a emissions path reduction, as a path for emissions reduction. So it was very, it was very innovative in the beginning, since there was no methodology developed for the wine sector. So we were the first ones. So it was a lot of work for us. And after we finished that, the implementation of that methodology is something that we decided to share with Wines of Chile, which is the association for the wine industry right here. Fortunately, was something that Wines of Chile consider really relevant for the wine sector, and we were talking for a while, and after that we decided to create together a project in which we invite the other wineries to use the methodology and developed the emissions reduction path according to the Paris Agreement, which is, the final goal is to be to implement real projects that are able to reduce carbon emissions in the wine sector. And we saw that also, we were discussing with Wines of Chile, and we saw that also as an opportunity for the country in order to differentiate the wine sector of Chile as a wine sector being responsible or to have this climate responsibility. Today, we have more than 15 wineries, the most important ones the biggest ones that are engaged with that methodology. And today they are working and implementing reduction plans in order to reduce the carbon emissions in the wine sector. So we think that this is the kind of actions that we need to take, and not only to share that with our competitors. It's finally something that you have to, you have to renew your point of view, and not to see them as competitors, but partners in which you can create a national movement or the industry movement around the climate action. And also, this is something that today we are sharing with the wine sector, but also in the value chain. We are working using that methodology as a general framework, because it's consider the methodology globally accepted as a credible and transparent reduction path for CO2 emissions. And we're also working with the packaging suppliers here in Chile, trying to engage the main packaging suppliers into that methodology as well. And We have been, we are working since 2021. We have been on that work for 2 years. And today we have almost 50% of the key suppliers of the company already engaged with the science-based targets to create that reduction path. This is something that we consider really important as well, because finally, you know, the suppliers for Viña Conchaitoro are the main suppliers for all the wineries right here in Chile. So this is, you know, something that we can do in order to promote the climate action, not only inside the company, but also in the value chain, which is something that we as a big company also have the responsibility to do. Finally, you know, you are, if you want to be a leader and nobody follows, you are not a leader. I mean, if you want to be a leader, you have to lead, you have to engage some other partners and engage your value chain, engage the people inside the company as well. So we can all give different steps in order to reach the ambitious goal that we are having today.
Valentina, thank you. Marta, let me come to you. Porto Protocol is all about examples of action and innovation. What are some of the ones that you've seen that have impressed you most that you'd like to tell us about?
All right, so I'll sort of ask you to come fly with me, as what we do every day is travel around the world, what we call our eagle's eye view, and come across solutions and try to share them with a wider audience. So I'll start with a micro-size company, which is one of the things that we asked for the most, which is to bring examples and best practices for very small businesses. And I'll start with LG Crafted Wines. They are in Napa Valley. They have a tastery room, and they do small batch wines that they serve directly from the barrel or in reusable bottles. So they're all about reducing, reusing, so all about zero waste. And they really made this into an opportunity. They do amazing wines that they choose themselves with the wineries by choosing the grapes and the wines from producers they know, and only serve it in zero waste solutions. And this completely tackles the biggest problem we know we have with the wine production, which is packaging. But they go all the way with reusables. Giving you another example from the other side of the Atlantic, we have a producer in Portugal. He is very small. And what he does, he goes out to restaurants and everywhere, and he asks for the bottles to bottle his wine, okay? So, and another thing he does, because he sells, he has a very small volume, he gets cartons, he turns them upside down, he has his own tape that he customizes, but it's a paper tape, but he picks cartons, he turns them upside down, and that's how he customizes his carton. So if this is not tackling the biggest problem the wine production has in terms of climate, I don't know what this is. And this is, we're talking very small business. And while we're in Spain, I'll take you to Perinet. Perinet, what it did was, along with other businesses, not only wineries, and building really sense of community and partnership that we just heard Valentina talk about, they built a solar panel, a big solar park, that they're all using. So they all invested as a community with various businesses, and they're all taking advantage of it. And I think it was Sandrine that mentioned measuring. When we're talking about measuring, when we're talking about efficiency, we are talking about business opportunity. And I have in front of me one of the participants, Victoria Gonzalez from Gonzalez Biaz. And she has an amazing winery. So here we go from a micro business to a very big business that has a new winery that is all about efficiency. Because when we're saving water, when we're saving energy, we are creating a business opportunity, because we are creating business for our own business. Going from Spain to France, I'll give you an example from Chateau Maris. Now, their example, I'm not sure if it's a business opportunity, but it is so disruptive that it is worth mentioning within this forum. So they built a hemp winery, and they will tell you how hard that was for them. But it's a biodegradable building. So it is so disruptive that it is worth mentioning here. I just saw Karen McNamara, and I will mention her as an example in the end because I'll land in the US again. So let me go there. Just give me a second. Karen. And I'll go from France, I'll go to the UK, where there is a company that we absolutely love, which is Sustainable Wine Solutions. It's just as pioneering as a Conscious Container from the US. And what she did was, again, using this zero waste approach, she's all about reusable formats in serving wine. So for example, she is a B2B business. She imports wines and she serves them in both in kegs, for example, but also in reusable bottles where she puts like a white line so people distinguish that bottle is being reused. So again, this was a business opportunity with the aim of reducing the impact of wine production. And it's interesting that the people that she was able to bring on board. Then I'll go to Italy with Salchetto, again, an amazing member of ours. And just one of the examples, because they think that they are an amazing example of thinking of climate action and sustainability in a very systemic fashion. And one thing that was mentioned here, which is a great example, again, from Salchetto, which is thinking that climate justice, people, it's all part of the equation, something that we've mentioned here this morning. This is absolutely crucial. And also because when we think about the people and engaging them, we're also creating a business opportunity because we're creating sense of belonging. We're giving people in our company something to believe in, not just the business. It's not just business as usual. Now, sorry for this. Let me go to Salchetto. So one of the things they do, and another example actually in Italy, which is Manicor, they use part of the waste created in the vineyard to produce glass frames. Now, this is crazy and it's amazing because it's really bringing circularity to life. Manicor, on the other hand, what they do is they have the tears from the vines and they have a partnership with a local small cosmetics firm and they do a serum for the eyes based on a very old ancient legend that says that that tear from the vines is very good for the skin. And then I'll go to South Africa where we have Villiers wines and they had these old vines that were not, the yield was very low. And so they took them off and they turned it into a wildlife sanctuary. And why this was a business opportunity? Because now they were able to develop something more to offer to their tourists. So not only they had the vineyards, but they created a wildlife sanctuary that can be visited by tourists. And I finish in the States with a couple of examples. People love carbon, but we must never forget, it's not just when we speak about climate change, we're talking biodiversity, we're talking soils, we're talking water. Water is the main word we hear with every single producer we speak from the whole world. But talking about carbon and in a variety of ways, for example, Tablas Creek, a member of ours from Paso Robles, is using biochar as part of their composting. Thrifeten is capturing the carbon the carbon produced during fermentation is pure carbon. It's more pure than the carbon that comes out of cars or planes. So they're capturing carbon. And though they still haven't developed it fully into a business opportunity, this is clearly innovation and a very big business opportunity for the wine industry as a whole. And I'll finish with Conscious Container that is taking to one woman show with a team, of course, trying to bring again reusable bottles to the world of Napa. And I think I've traveled the world and I brought you examples from every possible part of the value chain. And I hope it inspires every single winery out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Marta. That was very comprehensive. And I know there's a lot there, but if you want to post any links, I think Christina's been posting some. I think people would find that useful. That's a really interesting tour of innovation. I'm feeling quite cheerful now. I have to say, you guys have really cheered me up in the last 45 minutes or so, 45 minutes or so. So before I turn to James to talk a bit about the role of the SWR and for an example of innovation outside the wine industry, Sandrine, let me just come back to you just to see if there's anything you wanted to add. Because, I mean, you're part of an enormous, huge company. You spent an awful lot of money on that very nice-looking R&D center recently. You know, there's a lot of cash around in the luxury business. And I just wonder if there are other examples that, or things you wanted to say before we move into James, and then we have to move to a close.
Yeah, please. Yes, just one example about packaging, you know, for sure. It's one of our main emissions in our carbon footprint. It's due to packaging. And one example, for example, is with the Chateau Galoupet in the south of France. We have decided to create a new bottle and a new colored bottle in order to use more recycled glass. So it was quite the first time for rosé, you know, in the south of Provence to use a brown colored bottle. And we reduce as well the weight of the bottle in order to reduce the CO2 emission. So it's one example. Another example is with Ruinart, you know, the second skin of Ruinart. We have decided to, first of all, decrease the number of gift box and change a little bit the type of material, use more sustainable material for this gift box. So it's in a cellulose, you know, and completely fit to the bottle. We have a nice example with the Veuve Clicquot as well. We use hemp for the new cardboard gift box. And I would like to add something as well about transportation. I think it's very important. You know, we always think about the whole value chain. And at the end, we have to transport to deliver our product all over the world. So it's very important to push and to innovate in a low carbon transportation. And we are very proud because we have only 0.2% of air freight for our product. So we really, really, really promote the sea freight. And we support, for example, with NC and with Champagne Maison, we support the sailing cargo, you know, with Neoline, for example, or Tote. We promote and we invest to help the cargo with who is working with sailing, you know, to transport our product thanks to the wind. So just to mention some, but we have a lot of examples. Just to mention other examples, and I think transportation is very important as well to add.
Thank you. Yes, we have a session on that later, and it's definitely part of the Sustainable Wine Roundtable's remit. We haven't got there yet with a program and tool development, but we will. And on that note, let me shift over to you, James. So you've been listening very patiently for the last 45 minutes or so. I'm sure this has stimulated some thoughts on how the SWR, the Sustainable Wine Roundtable, might work with Porto Protocol and other partners to help enable and encourage some more of these changes. So what are your thoughts on that? And perhaps you have an example of innovation from outside the wine industry. James.
Yeah, thanks, Toby. Really, really good conversation. Let's just sort of go back a bit. I just want to talk about a few of the background sort of issues that are coming out here. Look, regulation, you know, when I started my career in sustainability, which was 30 years ago this year, regulation was the key driver. And of course, when you've got a fragmented and multinational industry like wine, regulation is difficult. So over 30 years, I've never seen so much action as in the last 5 years. And why? Because the money is starting to drive the sustainability agenda. The term ESG, environment, social governance, as you're all aware of, is the sort of finance sector sort of speak for sustainability. And things like the Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosure are really driving the investors to understand what the sustainability, primarily the risks, are in their businesses that they invest in. And so eventually this is going to scale up and scale up and will affect, you know, currently affecting very much the larger corporations, but will move right through the value chain. Another sort of thing in the background is that, we talked about carbon, about water, resources. Basically, it all fundamentally makes good business sense to reduce your emissions, to reduce your waste, you know, to be more efficient and more effective. So that reduces your costs. And then the other thing which, Kim, you touched upon really is about the importance now, the rise of carbon pricing. It's coming, okay? And once again, it's coming of the very big companies, but it's starting to percolate down. They will start to require, carbon pricing to be included through the value chain. And we've got a bit more about that in the transport breakout session. But Kim, very much noted your internal price of carbon. So it's important for everybody to start preparing with that. So with sustainability, what do we hear that businesses need? And you know, building on those points, good regulation, information to make decisions, and then connectivity through the value chain, and also with other organisations like academic institutions, NGOs, etc. Which then brings us on then to what can the sustainable wine roundtable really provide? And this is what we've set ourselves up to reflect these business drivers. So in absence of, a global regulation for the wine industry, which is kind of unlikely, we're very much self-regulating on sustainability. Different parts of the world, of course, have laws and regulations. But what we're really trying to do is to bring a reference standard that covers sustainability at all parts of the value chain. So that gives businesses certainty and clarity. Information sharing, absolutely essential. Great ideas. Marty, you've just listed these wonderful ideas, and Sandrine and Valentina, all of these great ideas. Now, that is exactly what we need. We need these information tools, examples, etc. And what we're doing is not all of these are perfect. They can stimulate ideas and people can pick them apart and take the bits of the values for them. What we're doing also at Sustainable Wine Roundtable is trying to fill in the gaps where the information is not perfect. We look at research, delving into that and saying, okay, let's get more information before we can really sort of move ahead in a concrete way. And then finally, really, is the connectivity. You know, we obviously talked about growers, producers, distribution, and also the retailers. But actually, we also have NGOs involved. We also have academic organizations, trade organizations, standard setters. So we need that collaboration clearly coming out. Toby, I won't talk about the example outside. We've had of wine. We've had so many great examples within there. So I'll leave you to finish up.
Okay, thank you, Sandrine. There's a question for you about soil health measurement frameworks. But if you can put that in the chat, we're going to stay on here, and we're going to take a quick break in a minute. But before we do, I just want to see if I can stop my video. If you have a look at that picture. That is my kind of Zoom profile picture. That is a 50-meter high GHG monitoring tower in the middle of the forest in Sumatra in Indonesia. And there's about 15 of these in Indonesia. Don't ask how much they cost. They can be quite expensive. But this is an example of what countries like Indonesia are doing to really measure the value of their forests and their land and the impacts of climate change. Smaller scale versions of this are coming to a store near you soon. And I think that gives us all optimism when we note how technology can enable us to do what Valentina was mentioning, measure and work out where we are. So I'll leave that there. Please give a virtual round of applause to James, Valentina, Sandrine, Kim and Marta. Thank you so much to the panel. That was fabulous.